Welcome back, my friends, to the MailRight Real Estate Agent Podcast Show. This is episode 91, and it's a timely one because we're about a week away from filing that great American tradition of our taxes. And we have none other than Rachel Kupin Ivanovich on, and she is one of the top CPAs in San Diego County to answer some of our tax questions. But before we dive into those questions with Rachel, I'm going to turn it over to Jonathan so he can tell us about our wonderful sponsor.
Oh, hi there, folks. And yes, our sponsor, the realestateuniversity.com. There you will be able to show you all the modern ways of marketing yourself and your business online, from Facebook to Twitter. So go to their site, learn more, and maybe join one of their courses. And you'll find the link in the show notes of this particular episode on the MailRight Real Estate website. Back to you, Thomas.
All right. And I'm going to give Rachel a chance to introduce herself to our listeners. Rachel, will you tell people a little about yourself before we get into the questions?
Thank you, Thomas. Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Good morning. My name is Rachel Ivanovich, formerly known as Kupin. I am an enrolled agent, not a CPA. There's a little bit of a difference between us. Enrolled agents are tax advisors who are, we take an examination given by the Internal Revenue Service. So we are licensed to practice before the IRS, like an attorney or a CPA is. So I have a tax practice in Carlsbad, California. I serve a lot of San Diego residents and their families and clients all over the world.
Nice. All right. Well, we're going to dive into some questions in just a minute, but I want to let my illustrious co-host introduce himself. Jonathan.
Illustrious. I'm not too sure about that, folks.
Jonathan, we lost your audio.
Oh, sorry.
He's on mute.
Oh, that was me, folks. I'm muted myself.
Actually, we quite prefer you that way.
I'm sure Thomas does. Fans and listeners, I'm the founder of the MailRight company. We're a marketing software company, and we provide software to build your audience locally and get more quality leads.
And I'm Thomas J. Nelson. I'm a residential realtor here in America's finest city. Of course, that's San Diego, California, where I'm never too busy for your referrals. And if you're an agent and you want to do some networking and you're from out of the area, I would love to do so. Shoot me an email or a text. You can reach me through my website at thomasjnelsonrealtor.com or find me on social media. I'm typically at Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. All right. Let's get over to our guest of honor, Rachel, who has been actually my tax advisor for a number of years. And I actually have had two previous tax advisors, one CPA in the past. And I got to say that she's been the best I've ever worked with because I never feel like I ask a dumb question, but I also feel like I'm in very good hands and she keeps me on track. And I know because of how busy she is and the demand on her time that she is one of the most sought after people to work with in San Diego County. And Rachel, do you actually serve people outside of San Diego?
Yeah, Thomas, I do. Like I was mentioning, as an enrolled agent, I'm licensed to practice in all 50 states and around the world. I have quite a few expat clients, meaning American citizens must file taxes even if they're living abroad. And so I have quite a few clients living in Canada, a couple clients in Switzerland, Finland, all over the U.S., like I mentioned. But definitely am a local tax advisor, love my San Diego, North County families and people in Carlsbad.
So you have an international clientele.
Yes, definitely. I have specialized a little bit in Americans living in Canada and love our Canadian friends.
Is that since the election?
Actually, my mom's Canadian American, so I had to learn about Canadian taxes.
All right, well, we won't go there. So before we dive into the questions I have for you, I think we should start off by just reminding people about when our taxes due this year.
Yes, that's a good question, Thomas. So most people know the traditional deadline, which is April 15th, which is this coming Saturday. However, because it falls on a Saturday, typically the deadline would be Monday, but because of Emancipation Day, the tax deadline falls on the 18th, which is Tuesday.
So we get some extra bonus time to cram here.
We do.
Okay. Thank you. All right. And then traditionally, I'm aware of three times a year that different entities file. You want to talk about those?
Yes, absolutely. So there are more than three. However, there are two filing deadlines for individuals. So April 15th is the traditional deadline that everyone thinks about. And nobody wants to file late, but it's not late if you file an extension. So October 15th is the extension deadline. And that's, for most tax advisors, a big day where we all work towards October 15th because we have to have all of our tax returns in by then. So the other deadline that you're mentioning, Thomas, is in fact the corporate deadline. Mm-hmm. And LLCs, so limited liability companies and S corporations, are due March 15th. So we already had that deadline. So typically, a lot of those entities will file an extension until September 15th. And the reason that they file by September 15th is so it gives you additional months to get that information translated into a personal tax return.
Ah, gotcha. So, and I discovered the beauty of the extension when I started working with you. I'd never done that before. And and I love it because it lets me get my P&L in shape by April 15th. But the details of that P&L, I've got the rest of the second and third quarter to take care of that. Is there an advantage to doing it the way I'm doing it, or is it just personal choice? Or, I mean, what do you recommend, or do you even recommend?
Well, obviously, we like to have as much time as possible to prepare accurate returns. So the extension deadline allows us that. So by filing an extension on April 15th, that just gives you another 6 months to gather your documents, make sure you don't miss any deductions, have additional meetings with clients, and really give them the time necessary to prepare a quality and accurate return. So a lot of people wonder, okay, am I more likely to be audited if I file an extension? And that's absolutely not true. You're likely to be audited if you do stupid things on your tax return.
Okay, fair enough. And thank you for answering the next question I had. I'm at 2017, filing my 2016 taxes. What do I need to consider when I'm filing this year? Have there been any big changes that I need to be aware of?
There are always changes to the tax code, but honestly, you know, from year to year, it's more of, you know, the client situation that I need to ask about. So for instance, I'll always go into a client appointment and say, hopefully there haven't been any big changes for you. And because I would rather the clients call me throughout the year and let me know, oh, by the way, I got married, or I had a baby, or I bought a new house, or I moved out of my house and converted it to a rental property. Rather than coming into the tax appointment. And I've had this happen in the past where clients, I've had their return almost completely prepared. And then they say, oh, would it matter if I got married this year? And so that's a little bit of a shocker usually for a tax advisor when, you know, you've already done the return and then they announce that they, you know, have a spouse. So
Oh, yeah.
One of the first things that I would do if I was getting married would be, even maybe before, call the tax advisor and say, you know, is there something that I need to plan for? Because typically what happens is when people get married is they get very excited and they change their exemptions on their W-2. They think, okay, now I'm married. I can uncheck the single box. I can check the married box. But unfortunately, what happens is that the withholding tables aren't adequate for that. And especially if there are two incomes, such as, you know, Southern California, San Diego County, where you're making $80,000, $100,000 on a W-2. Some people are making $300,000 on a W-2. And if you check that married box on your withholding worksheet, you're not going to have enough withheld. And then you'll come in and cry in my office because you didn't pay enough taxes.
Okay.
So always, always talk to your tax advisor when a big event is about to happen in your life.
Okay. So that, you know, and that's something I've never thought of is, and I would imagine a lot of people haven't thought of is, you know, I'm about to get married. I'm about to get divorced. I'm about to buy a house. I'm going to call my tax advisor.
Be your first move.
Okay. Well, so any big life event, and I would just go out on a limb and say, when in doubt, call your tax advisor.
And I'd like to chat with you, typically not the week before tax season's over.
Right.
Because we're working 14, 16 hour days. And a little tired and grouchy, but we try to put on a best face. And you know, you pulled me out of the tax cave this morning. I actually brushed my hair, put on some makeup. I considered wearing a mask, but.
Well, okay. So, I'm going to talk to you more from the point of view of a self-employed small business owner, because that's what I've been for 30 years. So I'm not your standard W-2 filing taxes. I have a more complex situation. So I go to a professional like you so that I know how to deduct properly. That being said, what are some of the red flags you see on self-employed tax returns that people may be doing completely innocently or maybe trying to get away with something?
Right. That's a great question, Thomas. This is my 18th tax season, and I do serve many, many small business owners. And there are, I would say, about five areas that typically are, I don't know if you'd necessarily call them red flag areas, but they're areas that the IRS really likes to look at and that you really need to properly substantiate. So for instance, the first one, I think probably the biggest one that people like to ask me about would be home office. So they ask, so is having a home office a red flag? And my answer to them is, well, it is if you try to write off everything. So you really want to be careful with the home office, and it does need to be regular and exclusive use, meaning it can't just be, you know, once in a while, but it has to be a dedicated room or area in your home that you're using. And so for instance, if you try to write off 50% of your home, you're probably going to get audited. If you write off 15%, let's say 150 square feet out of 1500 square foot home, it's not going to be a problem. That's 10%. But you get what I'm saying is you really don't want to be, you know, being greedy with the home office.
I want to see if I'm understanding you correctly. So it comes down to what percentage of the square footage does that home occupy? And that's the deductible percentage of everything that affects that home, as far as like, that would be things like your house payment, your utility bills. And if you're in an HOA, your homeowners association fees.
And your insurance on the home.
Insurance. Itself. Okay. All right. Got it. So you need to know, number one, what square footage percentage do you occupy? And number two, it needs to be dedicated. So it can't be a TV tray on top of your bed where you do your laptop. You got to have a desk and.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So you mentioned five. That's number one. What's the second one?
The second question that people call into my office is, how can I write off my car? And as real estate agents, you're in your car all the time. I mean, that's practically your office. So
right. What
I tell clients, and it is really a hard area for clients to track, because people hate mileage logs. When I ask a client, did you keep a mileage log? They kind of look at me like a deer in the headlights. So honestly, there are a great number of apps out there. I'm not going to necessarily name any, but if you go online, look for apps for mileage logs, there are a few. A piece of paper in your glove box works wonders. Doesn't need to be rocket science. All you need to write down is the date, where you went, and how many miles you drove. Another great tip is to get an oil change on January 1st or 2nd so that you're marking your beginning and ending mileage odometer reading for the year. Because when you go to see your accountant, we need to know two things. We need to know your business use miles and how many miles that you drove total for the year, because we're trying to establish a business use percentage. And oftentimes, you know, people say, you know, I use my car 80% for business. And that's how we get it, is that we look at how many business miles you drove divided by total miles for the year. So the way that you write off your car is you can take a standard mileage rate, which is for 2016, 54 cents per mile. For 2017, I believe it's 53.5 cents per mile. Hmm. And that encompasses gas, oil changes, insurance, depreciation, et cetera. So it's a pretty easy way for people to get a large deduction. And all you need to do is write down where you went, who you met with, and the date. And okay. So for instance, if you're going to networking meetings, if you're going to pick up supplies, if you're going to go meet with potential clients, if you as a realtor are driving around the neighborhood looking at homes for sale, or anything that you're doing for business, you just need to track that.
Okay. So, and one of the tips you gave me that I use is I just keep a little pad of paper in the car. And what I tend to do is I'll get in the car and with my phone, take a picture of the odometer in the morning. And then I have my schedule and then I can go through my mileage for the day. If I forget to log something, at least I know where I'm starting from with my odometer.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a great way to do it.
Okay. So, so essentially now when you say 54 cents per mile, so, and then you said things like oil changes, repairs,
So there are two ways that you can write off your car. So
okay.
The standard mileage rate, which is that 54 cents per mile, which encompasses all of the above, gas, oil changes, new tires, et cetera, or you can take your actual expenses. Depends on how great of a tracker you are. If you're using a software like QuickBooks, if you're using FreshBooks, if you're using one of the online Xero, one of those softwares, you can track everything fairly easily. But then there are other clients that just don't want to track those things. And then keeping a mileage log is easier for them. But if you do deduct actual expenses, you'd write off things such as the gas, oil changes, car washes, depreciation if you own your vehicle, the interest part of your car payment. If you have a lease, you get to take the lease payment less a small amount. So there are different ways to write off your car, but you do want to keep that mileage log no matter what.
Okay. So whichever way you decide, you have to track your mileage. And then, but if you're good at keeping records, is that something you help people determine like each year, what would be a better way to deduct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good.
Absolutely. Typically we'll calculate it both ways and whatever yields the larger deduction is what we take.
I like that. All right. What's number three?
Number three would be meals and entertainment. So we all have to eat and the IRS doesn't like us to write off personal expenses. But if, let's say you're taking a client out to lunch or a potential client, a vendor, their portion of the meal is tax deductible. So the main thing to remember about meals and entertainment is to write down the name of the person you met with, what you discussed for, what the business purpose was, and make sure you keep that receipt.
Okay. Yeah, that's important in real estate. Depending on your philosophy, most of my business is by referral. So I am not spending as much time buying ad space as I am taking people to lunch and coffee.
Right.
And to me, that's my marketing plan. So, but what you're saying is I don't get to deduct my coffee or my lunch, but I can deduct theirs if I treated them.
Yes.
Okay.
So you just brought up a great point and the meals and entertainment and advertising, like you just mentioned, or promotion, client appreciation kind of go hand in hand. It's one of those other areas that the IRS loves to look at. So for instance, if you are throwing an open house, or let's say that someone sends you a referral and you send them a gift basket, or you send them a gift card to their favorite restaurant, or you name it, movie tickets or right. something. Now that's promotion or client appreciation. You're thanking them. And by thanking them, you're building the relationship. And then you are, in fact, doing advertising for your business because people right. do business with you if they know, like, and trust you. So the IRS pushes back on this area quite a bit. But if you keep good records, so right on the back of the receipt, if you buy movie tickets, so-and-so client bought them for them, referred me this, potential referral. Just keep good records because it is an area that they like to look at.
Okay. That makes sense. Cause that's one of the things I do with my CRM. Whenever I send somebody a thank you gift, I'm putting down essentially the referral or the piece of business, or the connection they made for me that's thanking them for. And I do that also just for my own knowledge, because I like to keep track of, who my top referrers are and what I'm sending them, because I may just simply not want to repeat the same gift over and over to a good referral source, or remember what their favorite wine is, for example. So it makes sense in multiple reasons. I appreciate you pointing that out, because that's a big one in our industry.
It really is. And I will say that I had a client who was preparing their own return and they had quite a bit of promotional expenses and they did get audited, which is why you probably should go to a tax professional and not try to prepare your own return. But we did go and we won because, and I brought a book because a lot of small business owners these days are coached to promote their business by giving gifts and client appreciation.
Right.
The IRS has really pushed back with that. However, I brought the book, I pointed it out, I explained the fact that this is how people are, how people do business these days. It's not just take out a Yellow Page ad anymore. It's really, you know, build relationships and deepen the relationships. And, you know, that's how I do business. And so I was able to fight for my client and we won the audit. They actually ended up getting money back.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah. I mean, and so, but the main point is keep good records.
Yep.
Keep a calendar. If you're using, I use Google Calendar, for instance. I print out every week the appointments. So I just print out the screen for, you know, Sunday through
Saturday. Yeah.
Saturday. Print that out. Keep it in my accounting records, just in case they ever come, they can see the lunches that I got went to. They can see the appointments of the people that I met with.
That's a good idea.
And it's, it really also helps substantiate not only those meals and entertainment or promotion, but also your auto expense, because if you show, you know, the appointment on your calendar and it coincides with your mileage log, everything matches up.
Okay. All right. What's number four?
Wasn't client appreciation number four?
Oh, that we go, we kind of eased into that. Okay. Yeah. So we've, so far we've covered the home office, car mileage, meals and entertainment, and client appreciation.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Number five.
I am tired. It is into tax season, but
that's okay.
It's a good thing I can still count. Okay. So number five would probably be contractors versus employees.
Yes.
Very important area to watch. An area the IRS loves to look at. And you really do need to be careful. When in doubt, I say, make sure you check in with your tax professional. One of the key things that I tell clients is make sure you get a filled out and signed W-9 form before you pay the contractor. So if you're hiring someone to do work for you and you want to write off that expense, once you give them the money, they may not want to sign that W-9. So what the W-9 does, which you can download on Google or any web browser, it just takes their name, their tax ID number, and their address. They sign it, then you just let them know, look, I'm writing this off, which means you're getting a 1099. So I just have clients fill those out and just send them over to me so I can issue the 1099s for them the following year.
Okay. And I know from just paying referral fees and commissions when I'm the listing agent, we have to get a W-9 from the other agent.
Exactly.
So that's something hopefully our realtor audience is in the habit of doing.
Yeah, definitely do that. There are penalties for not issuing 1099s. They're getting steeper and stiffer, not only for clients, but also for us, the tax advisors. So if we know that you want to write something off and you don't issue a 1099, we get penalized if we put it on the return.
But now let's touch on at what financial point do you have to 1099 somebody?
That's a good question. So if you pay one individual more than $600 for services during the year, so it doesn't apply to if they're painting, you know, let's say you have a listing and you have a painter come in and fix the place up a little bit and you pay them, you only have to 1099 for the services, not for the actual paint or other supplies necessarily.
Okay. So this is for their labor, not their supplies. Okay. Exactly. Or materials, I should say. Let me throw a question at you then. So I own a rental property and I pay a gardener to take care of that property. Should I be 1099-ing the gardener?
You're writing that off, then yes.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Good to know. Before I press on, because I have a lot more questions for you, Jonathan, do you want to jump in or do we need to break for our sponsor?
I think we go for a break and then come back, Thomas, and you can ask some more questions. I'll be just fascinated just listening to all this, Thomas.
Okay, thank you. We'll be right back.
Do you want quality leads from homeowners and buyers right in your own neighborhood? Then you need MailRight. It is a powerful but easy to use online marketing system that uses Facebook to generate real estate leads at a fraction of the cost you'd pay from our competition. We stand behind our work with a no question asked 30-day money back guarantee. So don't delay. Get started today. Go to mail-right.com.
So we're coming back, Tom's is going to ask some more questions about paying your taxes, folks. It's got to be done, though, isn't it, Thomas?
Yeah, this is a necessary evil, I suppose. You know, I've been taught by one coach that it's a privilege to pay taxes because it means you're making money. Although it doesn't really feel like a privilege when you're cutting those quarterly checks. You know, again, coming from the point of view of a self-employed person who, unless I set something up for myself, I don't have a retirement plan unless I implement a retirement plan. So, Rachel, can you talk about ways that the self-employed can prepare for retirement?
Absolutely. And actually, this is a great topic and very timely right now, given that it is almost the tax deadline. So for self-employed individuals, there are several ways for you to put money aside for taxes, one of which would be the SEP IRA. And the SEP IRA stands for Simplified Employer Pension. And you have until the tax deadline to make contributions for last year's taxes. So you still can reduce your tax liability for 2016 by putting money away and basically paying yourself. So the SEP IRA, and you do need to consider if you have employees, think the rules change a little bit for you because you do have to contribute for your employees as well. But if, let's say you're a sole proprietor or you own an S corporation, you're a sole shareholder, you can put away between 25% to, you know, 20 to 25% of your net profit every year. And with the SEP, the great thing is if you do file an extension, you have until the extension deadline to fund. To fully fund that plan. So for instance, if you're an individual, you're a sole proprietor, you'd have until October 15th to fully fund your 2016 SEP.
So, and then what about the, I think they're called health savings plans. Do you have clients that use those?
I do have quite a few clients that use those, but before we move on from that, just to touch on two other vehicles that you can contribute to still, because the deadline for these two is actually the 18th of April, so you don't have that extension deadline.
Oh, okay.
So the traditional IRA or the Roth IRA are also vehicles that you can put money into. And if you do have employees, that doesn't affect, you don't have to necessarily contribute for employees on a traditional or a Roth.
And is this something that it's an either or can you do both and?
You can't do a traditional and a Roth. There is a cap on that's $5,500 per year. And if you're over age 50, you can put in another $1,000.
Okay. Would you repeat that? If I'm over age 55?
I believe it's age 50.
Oh, 50.
There's a cap. Yeah, catch-up contribution of an additional $1,000.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Okay, and so what other ways are you seeing, to the extent you can discuss it, your clients preparing for retirement? What are some tips and tricks you can share with us?
You know, honestly, if they are self-employed, the SEP IRA is probably the best way that, you know, people are putting money away because you can put so much away. You can, you know, fully fund up to, I think, $54,000 this year if your income's high enough, which is, you know, a pretty large contribution. Okay. I do have quite a few clients who they're sole proprietors and they've set up a solo 401k. So they contribute, you know, to the solo 401k, but then they also do profit sharing so that they can hit that $54,000 number every year. But then again, the traditional IRA works. The Roth IRA is great because it's a tax-free vehicle. You put money into a Roth, it grows tax-free. When you take it out, it's tax-free. People love those. So that's still something that you can do. As I said, the April 18th is the deadline for that. If one spouse works and the other does not, you can do a spousal IRA, which basically means you can fund for your spouse. Because one of the requirements for setting up an IRA is having earned income. But if your spouse is, let's say, staying home for a few years, taking care of the kids, then you can actually still fund your spouse's IRA.
Okay. Do any of your clients set up 401ks for themselves?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You do need to go through a financial advisor to do so.
But gotcha.
Yes. It's a great way to save for retirement. The solo 401ks, the fees are a little bit less. If you have a small business, the fees can be slightly higher, very higher.
Gotcha.
Which is why we do recommend, you know, the SEP, easy to set up. And you don't have to contribute to a SEP every single year. It's going to be a one-time thing if you want.
Okay. I appreciate that. I want to shift gears a little and ask you a question coming from the mind of a parent. I have a 20-year-old in college, and you know, going through life, he's cost me a pretty penny. You know, are there any deductions parents can take on their kids? Is that just me fantasizing?
That's a great question, Thomas. So, when you claim your child, you get their dependency exemption. $4,050 this year. California also offers a dependency exemption. So if your child is a full-time student, you can claim them until they're aged 23. If they're not a student, if they're living at home and couch surfing, then you still claim them. They're not working, but hopefully they're working. But besides the dependency exemption, if your child is in college, there are numerous credits and deductions available. There's the American Opportunity Credit, which is really, really great credits, dollar for dollar reduction of tax up to $2,500. There's an income limitation. So if you make, I want to say it's over 180,000, but they change the limits every year. So don't quote me on that. But there's also a tuition and fees deduction. There's something called the lifetime learning credit, but there are definitely ways to write off your child, your adult child's education expenses.
Okay.
And then for the little guys, there's the child tax credit available if your income's under $110,000 per child until they turn 16, which I don't understand why they get rid of it when they turn 16, because they're way more expensive when they're teenagers.
Yes, they are.
I know from experience.
Yes, you do.
And then there's also the child independent care credit, which is a credit dollar for dollar reduction tax. Doesn't really make up for the prohibitive cost of childcare these days, but that is also credit that's available. What I do tell clients is if the employer offers dependent care benefits, it's up to $5,000 of money that you can set aside to pay childcare tax-free. Please take advantage of that, because it is worthwhile doing that.
That's good advice. You know, I see this a lot in the trade, so I'm going to ask this question. What if a parent is bringing their child into their business to work? Can they deduct anything involved in training that child? Are they looked at differently because they're a relative versus a stranger, if you will?
Hiring your child is actually a really great thing, especially if you're a sole proprietor, because there are some tax breaks on the FICA. So definitely take advantage of that. And if you pay them minimum wage, which obviously, you know, it's called minimum wage for a reason, you can write off their wages against your income, and they will be then reporting in a lower tax bracket.
Okay. You know, I think we skipped over something that I wanted to make a point on. You brought up earlier the difference between having an employee or an independent contractor or a subcontractor. And that was an issue that I faced as a realtor. I naively thought I had an independent contractor working for me as an assistant. And then in conversation with you, I come to find out that that might not be the case, right, which led to me talking to my attorney, who gave me a very simple questionnaire.
Yes.
And based on how I filled that out, he looked at me and said, "No, you have an employee." Hence the reason why I have a virtual assistant now. But so that's something I just want to make sure people realize, especially in the real estate industry, that if you're dictating when people come to work and what they do at work, you've got an employee, and I'm oversimplifying it, but just be careful, because I have seen some interesting lawsuits of late because of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So just my biggest piece of advice is, call a tax professional, talk with them if you are in doubt. The IRS has a 20-factor test. You definitely want to be informed when it comes to having employees versus contractors.
Yep. Jonathan, I've been hogging all the airtime here. Do you want to jump in with any questions?
Well,
muted yourself again. It's scary that this guy's my technical advisor.
Oh, he's sharp today, folks. He's sharp. He's missing his wife, I think, still. One thing that occurred to me, what about the relationship between agents and brokers? Obviously, agents are self-employed, but in a lot of states, they have to be supervised or they have to work with a brokerage. So what is the kind of, around taxation, what are the relationship around that?
So what I'm hearing you ask, I think, is, so for instance, if there's a, I have quite a few clients who are lenders, let's just say, and typically because of the changes in the industry, they now receive a W-2 instead of a 1099.
Right.
And so they have a lot of expenses, which unfortunately now are, can't be written off as they would be if they were self-employed. So they have to file an additional form called the 2106 unreimbursed employee expenses. And that's a whole other discussion. But was that the question you were asking me?
Kind of, but basically most agents work for brokerages. And the broker takes a percentage of any successful sale.
Correct.
Are there any, that arrangement, are there any specific things that agents should know about that arrangement that could affect their taxation?
That's a good question. Okay, I have this come up.
See, I approved the question, did I?
Thank you. So how different brokerages report the 1099 income, it varies, definitely. And so I always ask for if there's a statement, because typically there will be costs associated, transaction coordinator fees, and E&O insurance. There are certain fees that sometimes they're included in that 1099 number that you receive, and sometimes they're not. So I always ask the question, and or if there's a statement, are there any expenses that are included in your 1099 that we still need to write off? Because they're reported, every brokerage reports those things differently. And I do work with a lot of real estate agents and lenders. I do know that, errors and omissions insurance is a big expense. The transaction coordinator fees are a big expense. And sometimes those get tucked into that 1099 income figure. And we definitely want to write those off. So I always ask the question. But that's a good thing to ask your broker if you work for a brokerage house, is what's included in my 1099? Is this, just my income, or are there some expenses that are in there that I need to back out?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I know in my experience, I've basically worked for four brokers in my career, and all of them have had me sign an independent contractor agreement.
Exactly.
And my 1099 has just been a reflection of my net. They take their split.
Exactly.
and the fees typically are mine. Like the E&O insurance is typically a separate bill I pay, and transaction coordinator fee. With some brokerages, it's a requirement for so many transactions, and then it's up to you. I mean, I've always had one, so that's an independent contractor fee I pay. But that's a great point, a great question too, Jonathan, because I know just from talking to Rachel in the past that has
come up.
Buried. Yeah, it comes up. Let's see. I wanted to ask you to go back to, because we kind of, I fear, glossed over the extension a little. What is exactly involved when somebody elects to file an extension instead of complete their taxes on April 15th? What can they expect?
Okay, so typically what I'll ask clients that will, that either A, want to go on extension, or B, have a more complex return, which if you have a more complex return, it just benefits you and to go on extension, because then we can dig up more expenses, we can do a better job, have more meetings. I really like to meet with clients to make sure that we're, not missing anything that could, lower your tax bill or get you a bigger refund. So in order to file an extension, it's fairly simple. It's one sheet of paper for the IRS. If it looks like you're going to owe money, because typically I'll put in, big income and big deductions, we kind of estimate, how much you think your expenses are going to be. And, if you have a house, mortgage interest, property taxes, some of those bigger ones, if you give a lot to charity, we'll throw that in there. But then we say, okay, it looks like you're going to owe, $10,000. And so I'll give you a voucher, you mail a check into the IRS, and that's pretty much all there is to it. You can pay online these days. They're great. You know, we have the links on our website to pay IRS and the Franchise Tax Board. They don't charge a fee as long as you use a debit card to pay them. But I mean, that's the big thing about filing an extension is that, you know, the IRS wants their money. The Franchise Tax Board wants it even more. you know, the state's penalties for, you know, failure to pay is, yeah, it's ridiculous. So I always tell clients, if you don't have money to pay, because that's always a question is, you know, I had a huge, you know, windfall this last year, paid off so much debt. I'm so proud of myself. And then I announce, okay, well, you owe the IRS $10,000. That's, you know, like a sock in the gut because they think, oh my gosh, I paid off all my credit cards. I paid off my car. Does that help? And, you know, that's great. It helps. However, it scares too.
Right.
So I'll tell them, you know, if you don't have money, you might as well go on extension because that will save the IRS from sending you love letters right away. So, right. You know, if you're going to owe them penalties and interest anyway, if you can't pay them April 15th, even if we file taxes now. So I'll tell them, if you have the money, pay the state in full. Always pay the state in full because the penalties are higher. If you have the money to pay both, then good on you. You did a great job. You saved, you know, 20% like I told you to.
Yep.
I think that's an excellent point. And to our listeners, it's a point which probably catches a lot of them because a lot of people that go into the real estate industry have been employed and exactly. They're going into a self-employed situation. Yep. And time goes quick, and let's say they are in their happy situation of having a successful financial year, and they don't withhold, do they? The thing I would advise, and I'll just see if you would agree with this, is keep the internal revenue, you know, be proactive, you know, even if you don't have the money straight away, it's better to go for an extension and then negotiate a payment plan. Exactly. Rather than just let them keep writing letters to you. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. I have advised clients, you know, do go on extension, like you said. It does buy you a little bit more time. When we do file the taxes, obviously they're due with penalties and interest, but at the same time, like you mentioned, there is a payment plan available. If you file and you know you're going to have the money to pay within 3 months, you can call them and ask for extension of time to pay. They happily grant that to you. The worst thing to do is to ignore them. And yep. If you get letters, ignore those letters. If you don't like opening them, give them to your tax advisor. We're happy to open them for you. And to the point that Jonathan's making is, you know, when you become self-employed, it's not easy. You know, it's, especially if you've, you know, had a job your whole career and all of a sudden, you know, you wake up unemployed every day and,
right.
You know, where's the next, you know, paycheck coming from that, you know, how am I going to pay my mortgage? How am I going to buy groceries and feed my kids? It's not easy. And I deal with so many small business owners. I am a small business owner. I totally get how hard it is. And, you know, it's a struggle and, you know, there's not enough money at the end of the day, it feels like. And, you know, we live in Southern California. It's expensive to live here. And it's hard to have the discipline to actually save the money to pay taxes. And like I mentioned, there are ways to pay online. I've advised some clients, go online and just make payments monthly. Or if you close a big deal, it doesn't matter that it's not time to pay that quarterly. Go online and pay some now.
Yeah.
Believe me, the IRS will happily take your money.
Yeah.
And once it's gone, they have it and you've paid in. It's like, you know, the paycheck you get when you have a job, you know, if your employer withholds, you don't even see it, you can't spend it. So if you're able to say, okay, I'm going to get a $10,000 commission check, I'm going to take, you know, $2,000 of that. I'm going to go online. I'm going to pay the IRS. Boom, gone. Send it in. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
That way, it never, you know, really is in your pocket. And at the end of the year, believe me, Thomas knows how happy he is when he's like, yay, I paid my estimates. You'll be so happy.
Yeah.
You know, it's thrilling to know that you've, you know, made those payments so that when you come in to do taxes, you know, hopefully you're breaking even.
Yeah. You taught me that, you know, the pain of doing it in the moment, you don't feel good doing it because it's like fixing the sewer line. It has to be done in the house, but you don't get to see it. You don't get to show it off, you know, so it's not a fun fix. You know, it's not like fixing up a kitchen that everyone gets to see your work. So, but at the end of the year, when, you know, you say, oh, you owe a couple thousand more instead of 12,000 more, that's where you feel the relief. So, and you raised a great point earlier that I want to punctuate here is, you know, people celebrate, oh, I paid off a credit card or I paid off a car. Put the IRS first in that list and get that quarterly paid off before you pay off the credit card, because they're going to put themselves first on the liens. So you might as well treat them as a priority. You've taught me a lot of great lessons, and that's the thing that I've valued more so than even your services is the education I've received. And, you know, just even teaching me about the extension, because like there are years, you know, where a realtor doesn't have the money if they haven't set it aside. And I'm the first to admit I was one of those realtors. I wasn't setting it aside. And to take that small penalty hit in October when you finally do pay it off is worth it, as long as you've, like you said, you take care of the state, you do as much as you can for the federal, and then come October when you file, you can pay what you ultimately owe. And then, you know, I mean, I've done that deliberately a couple of years in a row where I get a $200
penalty. It's not huge. And
no, it's not huge.
And it bought you 6 months.
Exactly.
And cash flow, because, you know, as a small business owner, that's one of the big things you want to manage is your cash flow. And it's so hard when you're writing that, you know, every quarter you're writing a $3,000 check to the IRS, which ultimately is better than writing a $12,000 check in April.
Right.
However, but it, you know, if you don't have it, if you, you know, let's say you have huge medical bills all of a sudden. Pay the medical bills. You know, yeah. Like, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to owe the IRS. Pay the medical bills if you need to. You know, take care of your family. Pay your mortgage. But at the same time, you know, it's not the end of the world if, you know, you put the IRS bill off a couple of months and then pay it. Obviously, you want to keep in compliance. But I have so many people who've stressed out and, you know, cried in my office because they don't have the money to pay taxes. I mean, you guys are not alone out there. Mm. So many self-employed people have these same problems. And, you know, I've had my own practice for 11 years. I see the same things over and over. I see the same struggles. You know, people don't like keeping a mileage log. People hate paying their estimated taxes. You know, people come to me sheepishly and say, I haven't kept my records this year. You know, when I ask them, you know, so how much money did you make? Oh, I have no idea. I'm like, okay, let's get you on track this year. Let's start a spreadsheet. You don't have to use QuickBooks necessarily. I mean, it's helpful. And as your income grows, yes, you should use QuickBooks. But if, you know, you've been in the business for a couple of years, or, you know, you're starting out in real estate, don't start with QuickBooks. Focus on leads, building relationships, get out there, you know, meet with your clients, hire a bookkeeper, for goodness sakes. We're not expensive.
Yeah.
What is it? $50 a month, $100 a month is worth it. Then you know how much you have to pay quarterly. You know where your numbers are, because without knowing what your numbers are, you can't change things.
All right. Well, and you know, I think people, they get into real estate, for example, and I hear this time and time again, they're a bunch of free spirits because of the freedom of the schedule. You know, you hear, I love working with people. I love showing houses. There's no ceiling. As our famous Brian Buffini coach says, there's also no basement. So you can fall as deep as you can rise. So without a plan. And the point I'm making is have some sort of a plan. It doesn't have to be the most sophisticated plan, but just something to keep you organized, because I can tell you the more organized I got over the years, the less expensive doing my taxes became. Exactly. And when you can correlate a savings in both time and money, it's worth doing, even though in the beginning it feels like you're shackled with another task. Oh, I don't want to do this, you know. But, you know, there's freedom in the discipline. I'm just going to emphasize that. There's a lot of freedom by staying organized.
Well, yeah, and also I think everything Rach has pointed out, you know, one of the biggest hurdles was the mileage. I use an app myself. There's, like what Rach said, there's a number of them available, and it really, really does make keeping mileage records so much easier. And it, you know, every month, there's a Pacific day where it's get my accounts ready for my bookkeeper, and everything is sorted methodically and clearly for, and then it saves me her a lot of frustration and saves me a load of money, folks. So what do you reckon, Thomas? I think we should end it now and then maybe go on for a couple more questions afterwards, which people can see on the YouTube channel and on the website. What do you think, Thomas?
I think so, because I've got a juicy question to ask, and I'm saving it for our video bonus material.
Right. I can't wait, Thomas.
Great question.
Well, let's sign off on the audio portion. I want to thank everyone for listening to our podcast. And if you want to hear the rest of this, you can join us on our YouTube channel or on the website for the video. Rachel, will you share with people how they can get in touch with you if they want tax advice or service?
Thanks, Thomas. You can call my office, 760-730-1817, or you can check us out on the web, elmtax.com. That's elm like the tree and tax like income tax.
And that stands for Easy Life Management, which I neglected to say earlier. So shame on me. So let's say that one more time. Rachel's with Easy Life Management out of Carlsbad, California, and she's easily reached online. Jonathan, how can people reach you if they want to improve their online presence with MailRite?
Oh, it's quite easy, folks. You can find me on Twitter at Jonathan Denwood. That's my personal Twitter feed. I'm on there most days. Got any questions about online marketing around real estate, you can ask me there. You can email me. I do answer anybody that emails me. And that's Jonathan at mail-right.com.
And I'm Thomas J. Nelson, a residential realtor here in San Diego, California. If you are looking to relocate to San Diego, or if you, say, have a student at UCSD that wants to get out of the dorm and into maybe a local condo where you can build some equity and maybe pay back some of that tuition, or you're in the military and you're leaving San Diego or arriving in San Diego and you need to buy or sell, those are some of my specialties here. You can find me at thomasjnelsonrealtor.com or find me at Thomas J. Nelson Realtor on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Rachel, once again, want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll ask you to hang out for the video bonus material, but we're going to sign off now from the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye.